Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 453, August 26, 2010. Steven?
This F1Weekly podcast brought to you by Cameron Karting. Cameron Karting offers CRG carts, engines and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support for all Northern California carters. Check them out at CameronKarting.com. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, Spa-Francorchamps hidden surprises. Can Kubica be a Fisichella this weekend? The FIA are preparing to choose the 13th team. That's the spot where the USF1 team was supposed to fill. And, of course, Motorsports Mondial with some killer interviews with, of course, Bob Bondurant and Hiro Matsushita, who raced in Champ Car and famous for having an accident. And then all of a sudden, Jacques Villeneuve hit him broadside in 1994, of course, all available on YouTube. Great interviews. Keep up the good work, Nasser. More zeros on the way. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Not too bad. Of course, you know, this three-week period of vacationing, gardening, working on the vintages is finally coming to an end, and we have Spa-Francorchamps to boot.
I think that's a really good choice for coming back from the break.
Indubitably.
Going to Spa is just, you know, all the history and just a fun track to watch a race at.
Absolutely. I can't wait. Apparently something always happens at this track from, of course, last year's Fisichella on pole, Force India peaking. And, of course, they've come out and said, we don't expect that to happen again.
Don't expect that this weekend.
But it's pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm expecting Renault to maybe pull out some surprises. They're introducing their first use of the F-duct system on the R30.
Will be interesting to see if that really gets them, buys them some additional tents.
I think it will. I think it will. I mean, McLaren is talking, well, last week they said they were not going to use the F-duct. And of course, just a few days ago, they said, well, oh, wait a minute, we might bring it anyway, we're not sure.
What are they trying to do? What are they trying to freak out the Red Bulls into not bringing theirs or something?
Come on. It could be some kind of
bluff.
Everybody's always playing psychological warfare or some kind of strange game. But sure enough, yes, I was surprised when they said they were going to pull it off the car. But then they sort of recanted that. And now they're saying that they will decide on Friday.
Yeah, I thought they actually said they weren't going to bring it to Monza.
Well, what do you mean?
That they were not going to take it with them to Italy for that race.
I'm not sure, Steve, but it's all very peculiar.
Yes, especially even for Monza. It's like what, the second fastest track of the year? It's like, what are you talking about not bringing F-duct?
Exactly. So we have Spa-Francorchamps. It's going to be exciting. I'm hoping maybe Nasser has a few tidbits about Spa in, you know, moments in
a motorsport. Somewhere in the Mondial.
Somewhere in the Mondial, but very good stuff. Also, the FIA revealed this week that they will be choosing the team to fill the 13th slot that a lot of people think we don't really need, including Ross Brawn.
Well, if they're not at least mildly competitive, you know, we really don't need another HRT. But 13 teams, an extra team, not a big deal. But, you know, I think maybe we need to look at the qualification rules. And, you know, maybe we have seven out in the first session and four of those people don't get the race. Because that's one of the problems is you get so many of these cars and so many of them are not getting lapped three, four times a race. And that's just, it's just downright dangerous.
A little bit, but of course, the big name in all this is Jacques Villeneuve teaming up with Durango. And they made a big presentation last month in Switzerland to the FIA. And Jacques Villeneuve said that everyone looked satisfied, but at the same time, we were in front of a panel, which was not unlike being in front of a judge. And he said his team presentation pretty much was just laid out and got no feedback from it. So he really doesn't know whether he's going to be chosen or not. And of course, then you have the...
That's because he didn't grease any palms while he's there. If he greased some palms, he would have gotten some feedback.
You know, I don't know. But we'll see what happens. There's still a possibility that, you know, HRT might not be here next year. Or they could join up with the Basque team, Euskadi. So there's a lot of strange things going on. But it doesn't matter because we're at Spa.
Yeah, and we're still in this season. You know, next season will take care of itself in the next several months. It'll be nice to know who they've decided on. But you know, as soon as they announce them, there'll be rumors that they won't make it to the grid.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens. Also appointed was R. Nige
as this week's steward.
Exactly, which is exciting. Nigel Mansell. Better watch it, Michael Schumacher.
Yeah, well, this is one of those races, too, that we always seem to have something weird happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago, we did certainly have something weird happen when they started raining towards the end of the race, and then Hamilton and Raikkonen, and everybody was freaking out. But I don't see anything like that happening anymore, because everybody's sort of touchy-feely now.
Really?
Yes.
Bunch of whip drivers in Formula One?
Pretty much. But anyway, Nigel Mansell or Nigel Mansell will be the race steward's role at the weekend for the Belgian Grand Prix. So good for him.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a nice paycheck.
I'm sure it's great. I'm really happy for him. But anyway,
free hotel room, free ride to the, you know, airfare.
And he's going to be there when they start stacking those bricks on the front wings of Ferrari and Red Bull.
That'll be interesting.
Well, I hope they have a whole TV show about it.
You know, I hope that I hope there's some coverage of it.
And I hope there's something.
In some back garage.
I don't want to hear, you know, some kind of report. I want to see film.
Yeah.
I want to see what's going on.
I want to actually see them do the measurement.
And to be honest with you, I think Red Bull should maybe even do their own test to see the limits.
Yeah, there you go. See how much it takes to actually bend the wing.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens, but I think that's the biggest exciting part of this weekend besides being at Spa and in Belgium, which I adore.
Did they change the rules on them too? They upped the number?
They upped the number because of... Yeah, and the problem is just because McLaren couldn't come up with a concept of their own...
Yeah, couldn't make it work for themselves. Ooh, let's...
Then it's got to be against the rules.
So is McLaren the new Ferrari?
You know, I don't even want to get involved... with the FIA conspiracy and all that, but I guess McLaren is the new Ferrari. I mean,
it's like, ooh, we're not getting our way.
So anyway, we'll see what happens, and I hope this happens on Friday before, you know, everything gets exciting.
I would expect them to do it, you know, like before Friday practice or something.
Right.
You know, or maybe you do it at the end, you know, during Friday practice when they do one of the scrutineering checks or something.
Yeah, of course, and of course both teams will have, of course, the spare wing that's stiffer and not as exciting, but in case failure looms.
Well, they'll have to put the new one on and have it tested too.
Well, of course, but still, the new one will be made out of iron.
It'll be a lead wing. We'll get our downforce somehow.
Exactly. So anyway, yeah, we'll see how those wings come out, hopefully on Friday before practice. Quickly, any predictions for this weekend, Steven?
Red Bull, front row.
You're really going out all the way this time.
Way out on the limb for this week.
Well, I don't know. Red Bull's, you know, these are big straights, a lot of power.
Yeah,
McLaren and Ferrari could come up with some good numbers here.
And I think there are some second-tier teams that might be a bit surprising because we've seen some team, you know, even when they've been having their challenges like the last couple of weeks, it's... been the Force Indias looked really good in the speed traps.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and they've got some top end in that.
And they're going to look at that data from last year. They're going to look at Fisichella's setup. And they're going to go, Vitantonio Liuzzi, this is the setup you're going with.
Well, actually, you know, frankly, they'll probably use it as their starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to.
And then go from there and tweak that and try to dial that in a little farther. It'll be interesting to see because I think the real challenge that Force Indias had this season is the fact that they really haven't gotten to grips with a heavy car.
Very true.
That's really what's kind of held them back. I agree. And that's what's kind of hung them up. But it'll be interesting. The fact that the Renaults have an F-duck this week could give them that edge that moves them up a couple spots. Maybe, you know, Robert Kubica pulls out a first row somehow, or gets himself up to the second row this week. So there's a couple of variables that we're going to see this week. Should be interesting to watch.
I know, and I think Force India should be able to get into Q3 with some of those low fuel levels.
Yeah.
And they do well on the long straights. They've got that Mercedes-Benz motor. I think Force India should at least get in Q3. Renault, of course, the question, will he be P7 or P4?
Yeah, and also the other question from Renault is, will Vitaly bring his early season form or his later season form to the track? And, you know, how is he going to run this weekend? Is he going to get himself into Q3 with the added boost of having an F2?
Of course, and I think we'll find out in Friday practice when they first start using the F-Duck whether they have the advantage that they're hoping for. Also, is everything copacetic at Red Bull? Everybody's had a vacation now. They've been to the beach. They played la guitarra. You know, everybody's happy and relaxed. And the relationship between Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel is going to be interesting. All of a sudden, they're back at the track after a nice little break. A little breather, and maybe a little reflection, you know, yeah, while they were sitting on the beach.
One hopes that they've basically talked it out at least far enough that, hey, dude, the one thing we won't do is take each other out.
Because
frankly, they need to get the points and then save the racing for the final two races.
And is Sebastian Vettel going to respect the fact that now Mark Webber's leading the championship by a few points, and he is now relegated
to the second? So, in other words, if they've got the super flexi wing that they're using, or do they have a middle flexi wingy, and then the really stiff wingy, who gets the middle stiffy wing?
Exactly. So it's going to get we're always going to see some politics rear its ugly head, but still, for us, the viewer, it's a lot of laughs.
Yeah, it's part of the entertainment. It's part of the reason I enjoy Formula One, is because there is so much going on away from the track, between the races, and also with really in no other motorsport do you have two teammates who are basically racing the same equipment like they are in Formula One. You know, even you get the IndyCars where they're running teams, the two drivers on those teams typically aren't really running, well, they're spec cars, so it's automatically the same equipment. There isn't that possible variable that, hey, we've got this new bitchin' wing this week.
Well, that's
we've only got one this week.
That's going to change next year for IndyCar. And in an IndyCar as well, often teammates have completely different liveries.
Yeah.
Which is really bizarre.
Well, that's all sponsorship.
Correct. A driver can bring different sponsorship to the same team.
Well, that and the team can get, you know, double their money. You know, like, hey, I've got Juicy Fruit Gum doing this car, and I've got Target stores doing this one.
And BAR used to do that with one car being one cigarette and the other being the other, but all that got thrown in.
No more tobacco. Bummer.
We have good news for Nasser's favorite young driver, Romain Grosjean, will be returning to GP2 for DAMS in Belgium this weekend. It's going to be great. He's replacing the injured Ho Pin-Tung. And Ho Pin-Tung also is the reserve driver for Renault. And apparently, you know, he's damaged some vertebrae. He's healing and he's doing fine.
Yeah, but he's going to be. He won't be back until probably next season.
And Renault needs to make a decision. Do they keep Tung as the reserve driver, even though he's on the injured list, or do they go and say, Romain, you know the routine.
Yeah,
come on down.
And we probably still got a race suit that'll fit you.
Exactly.
It's close to the right colors.
So I'm hoping Romain Grosjean gets that shot.
Or at least, you know, gets the opportunity to have the opportunity kind of thing.
Exactly, because I think he's a pretty good driver, and what happened at Renault.
Yeah, and it all comes down to, too, what's the option? You really can't run with Tung as your reserve because he can't ride. He can't drive. So you've got to name someone that you could actually put in the car if you need to.
Well, they don't need to, but they should.
Yeah. Well, you should, yeah, exactly. Cover your bases because, you know, who knows?
I agree.
You know, Vitaly does something dumb in Friday practice and you need a driver on Sunday.
Well, Vitaly is now a mature Russian dude.
Okay. somebody does something dumb and runs into Kubica, you know.
Yeah, well, anything can happen, but still, you're right, no reserve driver. And I would assume that Romain Grosjean would be at the top of that list.
I would think, unless they've got some young gun that they've, you know, that they're holding in reserve that they want to sign up.
Exactly. Of course, once again, back to Renault with the F-Duck. They're really not that sure how well this is going to work.
Yeah, well, the fact that, you know, you've got no testing, you know how it works and how it looks in the tunnel, the wind tunnel, and in your you know, aerodynamic models. But, you know, that's not a racetrack.
I know.
And whether or not it's going to give you the performance advantage or boost that you think it is,
Oh, I'm counting on it. I'm counting on it, and I'm predicting Robert Kubica P4 for the Grand Prix of Belgium.
I had him in the second row.
That's second row, yeah.
It's back to the second row, but I was thinking more P3.
No, I'm thinking P4. No, we're going to have probably Lewis Hamilton in P3.
Possibly.
I think something's going to happen, and Fernando Alonso is going to be P1. I've said that before.
Yeah, but I don't think Ferrari's got the top end to
you don't think
displace
so?
The Red Bulls.
It depends if those front wings pass. Everything's is
you know on even those if they wings, even if they don't
they'll be all
because
right.
It, well, it comes down to whatever performance advantage they may be getting. It's a black mark against both the Red Bulls and the Ferraris because both of them are supposedly running the same wing, unless their wings are just enough different that one will pass and one won't. I don't think. If that happens, then, you know, Lewis has a chance at pole because he's going to pick up that advantage. And even Robert Kubica with the F-duct advantage that the Red Bull's going to gain. I mean, the Renault's going to gain. He could sneak in.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That would be insane.
We do need something fresh and exciting.
It would be nice to kind of have a real surprise. What would really be nice would be for pole to be not a Red Bull, a Ferrari or a McLaren.
Exactly.
Somebody else, whether it's Renault or maybe Nico Rosberg has the lap of his life, you know, something like that, you know, or even Rubens just suddenly gets back to his old form and gets a Williams up there.
Exactly. Well, speaking of Mercedes Grand Prix, we know Michael Schumacher will be accepting his 10-grid penalty for the move on Rubinho, who's apparently doing his 300th Grand Prix this weekend.
That's just...
It's just not natural.
Yeah. The first thing that popped in my mind, that's just wrong.
Yeah, you know, it's just bizarre.
300 Grand Prix. And, you know, you couldn't have done that... You know, you probably couldn't have foreseen it when he started, that he could hang on that long. Any driver, just the nature of the business when he started... You know, if you got the 300, a lot of guys who got into the hundreds ended their careers in accidents and never came back kind of
no,
stuff.
No, it's an amazing time for sure. And it's an amazing record. But Rubens Barrichello, 300th Grand Prix. And, of course,
we got to figure part of that is because he happened to be one of the guys that helped drive the major changes in the way the cars were built.
Absolutely.
Safety-wise, just because he was involved in that same weekend.
Absolutely.
As Ayrton Senna and...
So many accidents that weekend.
Exactly.
I agree, but quickly, Schumacher will be watching his P's and Q's.
Because his favorite opponent will be the steward.
Exactly. So it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a great weekend with Nigel Mansell, Schumacher way back at the grid. We'll see. I mean,
Michael's got to be careful that he's getting a second 10 grid penalty and have to start in his pit box.
Of course. And there'll be interviews, and we'll see if Michael will talk to Rubinho. And
I wouldn't doubt that there's a camera moment on the grid before the race where Michael and Rubinho shake hands or
they
something.
They should, because really, you know what? These guys have been around Formula One for a long time now.
Yeah. You know, teammates, former teammates.
Yeah, old men of the sea.
Consummate professional, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. I mean, these guys will be around the bar in 20 years talking about the old times, and Schumi will be mocking, you know, Rubinho, and Rubinho will
be... Do you remember that time you had to give up the lead to me?
No. It's going to be good stuff. So I'm looking forward to this weekend. Great stuff. And I'm really glad they chose Niga and Mulzel, because you need somebody substantial. You know, not Danny Sullivan.
Yeah, well, not only that, for this particular race, I think it's important for the steward to be a strong personality.
I agree. And I have a funny feeling for Monza, they're going to bring in Mario Andretti.
That would be cool.
You think?
That would be cool for them to
it would be cool. So there you have it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Motorsports Mondial. And of course, afterwards, we have the interview with Hiro Matsushita and Bob Bondurant, who got married this year in Monaco on the grid. So keep up the good work, Bob. We'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards from F1 Weekly 5. Spa this weekend, baby. The three-week torture is over. And are we excited about Redion and Pouhon and Eau Rouge? The simple answer is yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you excited, Mr. Fab?
I'm very excited. It's going to be nice to get back. And like I mentioned to Clark in the first segment, it's like the perfect race to come back from the summer break on. You know, Spa, the history. Just a beautiful track, one of my favorites, because it's one of the few tracks on the calendar these days that where you kind of feel like when the driver's racing, he's going someplace.
That's what David Hobbs always says. Yeah, you are going someplace and very fast.
Exactly.
I love it. We start today's Motorsports Mondial with racing from NorCal at Infineon Raceway, also known as Sears Point, which is 90-minute drive from the palatial studios of F1 Weekly. We're blessed, you know, 90 miles north is Sears Point, 90 minutes north is Sears Point, 90 minutes south is Laguna Seca.
Exactly. I actually ended up driving past Infineon today on my way to a client site.
Oh, that's good. IndyCar action, back to the front for Willpower. Australian Penske driver had a dominating weekend, winning pole and the race and extending his championship lead. All this on a track where he broke his back in a vicious accident last year, which I believe was in qualifying. Victory was his fifth of the season, and Ganassi teammates Scott Dixon and Dario Franchitti was second and third, respectively. The Cat Meow division was won by Swiss Miss Simona Di Silvestro, and Sato-san has some issues now with, or actually I should say Danica has some issues now with Sato-san. Did you watch the IndyCar race?
No, I didn't get a chance to catch any of it. I was driving all over the county on Sunday.
Yeah, okay. Power leads the championship with 514 points. Franchitti is second on 455, and Dixon third on 419 points.
So did Swiss Miss finish ahead of Danica?
Oh, yeah. She has been doing a much better job.
I saw that she had outraced her at Watkins.
Yeah, most places, yeah. And she's a good racer. She's a racer, not a stripper.
Well, a front man for whatever sponsor rolls along.
Exactly. Indy Lights, pole and win number 5 for Jean-Carl Vernet from Lyon in Francia. Charlie Kimmel from Ventura County was second, and James Hinchcliffe from Canada was third. In the championship, Vernier leads with 412 points, followed by Hinchcliffe on 341 and Kimball on 327 points. You know, last October when I was at Hockenheim for the DTM F3 Euro Series race, Jean-Carl Vernier had won one of the races, and I did an interview with him in the press after the press conference. And he was asked in the press conference what his plans were. Is he planning to move towards Formula One? And he says, no, Formula One is very political. Then he was with Volkswagen, like a Volkswagen supporter driver. And he says, my goal is to go DTM. So I don't know if he's been dropped by Volkswagen or he's just decided better to come here. But, you know, this, coming here is a very smart move, and I'm going to tell you why. If you're racing in the cutthroat European series like F3 Euro Series and GP2, and you cannot get into the top five in the first 2 years, that pretty much
ends your career.
Yeah, it does not end your career, but that pretty much sends a signal to Maranello and Woking, you are not F1 material. And while you're still in your early 20s and you still can get sponsored, it's better to come here. I mean, look how good Will Power has done and Ryan Briscoe. They all race there, you know, in Europe.
Yeah.
So this was a smart move on the part of Jean-Carl Vernier or his management or whoever is making decisions for him. Okay, we stay stateside with American Le Mans Series from the best racing track in the United States, Road America at Elkhart Lake in Dairy and Packer Country, Wisconsin. Drayson and Cocker combination won the race in their Lola Jet. Graf and Bernhard were second in their Porsche Spyder. Also at Road America was the Star Master Series. Pole number 8 and win number 6 for Connor Daly. He is having a great season, which should give him a lot of confidence for racing in Europe next year, which is the plan of the Daily Double, Connor and his papito Derek.
Yeah, he's just tearing that series up.
Yeah, and he's a very nice kid. He presents himself very well, easy to deal with. I wish him all the best, and I would love to see him either, you know, since his father is guiding him, he will not make a dumb move and jump into GP2 right away.
Yeah, he's not going to ramp up the ladder too quickly.
We expect him
to go to Europe and get into maybe F3, maybe GP3.
Yeah, GP3 or F3 would be very good for him. And in British F3, they are doing three races a weekend now. And F3 Euro Series has now gone to the same program next year. So you will get a lot of testing. One problem,
a lot of car time, a lot of wheel time.
Yeah, that's what you don't get in GP3, unfortunately.
Yeah, because you're racing on the same tracks and the testing is pretty much moot because it's an FIA run series.
Yeah. Now we go to, there's another young, talented American kid who I'm very high on, U.S. Formula 2000. Sage Karam from Nazareth, PA, won both races of the weekend, and our exclusive chit-chat with him coming soon, and they were also at Road America. And he's with Andretti Autosports. He's enjoying cheeseburgers and 50 Cent. That's his choice of music.
Yeah.
And the kid is very talented and future is looking bright, but like he told me, he doesn't want to go to Europe. He wants to stay in America. So, but the kid is good. As long as you're winning, doesn't matter where you're racing.
Yeah, 2000, he'll probably be in Indy Lights next year.
Yeah. And what trip to America would be complete without a trip to NASCAR?
Indy NASCAR.
Yeah, Bristol, Tennessee. Not to be confused with Bristol, Connecticut, which is home of the Total Sports Network. And this was very, very amazing. An historic weekend for Kyle Busch as the Nevada native becomes the first driver in NASCAR history to win all three races in one weekend, the Cup, Nationwide, and the Truck Series. Very, very impressive. Peter Windsor should sign him up immediately for his new next F1 project, PVF1. And now we take KLM and Heineken nonstop to Amsterdam with continuing service to Seaside Track at Zandvoort for DTM, the German Tin Tops, and F3 Euro Series. We shall start with DTM, German, oh please.
No.
Gary Paffert and Paul, this is what happens when you come here straight from work after 10 hours on the job. Gary Paffert and Paul Di Resta 1-2 for Mercedes, followed by Timo Scheider and Matthias Ekstrom for Audi.
It's the German team.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, same billing, we had F3 Euro Series, which is a series I like very much. This series took a really big hit after GP3 came on the scene.
Yeah, really tough to compete with that.
Yeah, and win number 5, a lot of drivers scored their 5th win this season and this weekend. 5th win of the season, that is. Win number 5 for Italian Edoardo Mortara over Valtteri Bottas and Marco Wittmann. Second win of the season in the second race for Antonio Felix da Costa of Portugalistan, Dr. Miguel's homeboy. This kid is very talented, and I think he will go places too. Lawrence Van Thur of Belgium was second. Now we go to Silverstone for British Touring Car Championship. Tom Chilton won the first two races of the weekend for Blue Oval. Tom Onslow Cole made a clean sweep for Ford by winning the third and final race. Also on the show was Formula Renault UK. Both races of the weekend were won by Tom Blomqvist, son of rally star Stig Blomqvist. I believe this kid is like 15 or 16 years old, and he's a rookie, doing extremely good. A third race was held from the postponed round 5 and was won by local chap Lewis Williamson. Now we go to the Danube Hungaroring 1,000 kilometers in the Le Mans series. Winners were Danny Wards, Johnny Kane, and Nick Leventis. Mansell Munchkins, Greg and Leo were 7th. Nicola Prost and Neil Johnny were 8th.
It's actually a good showing for the Mansell Munchkins.
Yeah, well, yeah, but what happened? A lot of the LMP1 cars dropped out.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's usually an explanation when.
Yeah. And, you know, like this gentleman from Fortec Racing said, Richard Dutton, he said that Greg has some potential. You can invest in him. But he said, you know, Leo, I cannot help. So you know what that means. Okay, now we mention F3 Euro Series. Where shall we go now? We go to GP2 news. I believe Clark covered this earlier. Both Romain Grosjean and Alvaro Parent, who is also from Portugal, will be back in action at Spa. It's like a one-off deal. And GP3 news, this is very interesting. Championship could be decided on Saturday if Esteban Gutierrez of Mexico finishes ahead of Robert Wickens of Canada. And moi, yours truly, had made a prediction that in GP3, the top three drivers this season would be, not in any order, let's go alphabetically, would be Gutierrez, Rossi, or Wickens. And of these three, they are in the top four.
Exactly.
Yeah, Gutierrez is leading, Wickens second, Nico Müller from Switzerland is third, and Rossi is fourth, and I'm hoping that he will get into the top three before the season is over.
Yeah. Actually, I want to get your input on something we talked about when we brought up Romain Grosjean earlier. The fact that he's sitting in for Ho-Ping Tung in his GP2 seat, do you think that Renault will sign him to a temporary contract as their reserve driver, or will they pull somebody up from somewhere else?
I think he will get back to Formula One. I'll tell you the reason I say this. He was a victim of politics. And of course, he also did not perform very well in Formula One, but he has been very quick. He is as quick as Nico Hülkenberg. Okay. And of course, the teams he's driving for Dams is owned by people who were affiliated with Jenny Capital. So I think he's going to get his way back. Wow. And the guy is good. And I remember, you know, when he was racing in GP2, Kobayashi could not run with him. Sebastian Buemi could not run with him. The guy is quick, there's no question about it. And he's now pretty much established as a French driver, not a Swiss driver, which he really is. So I think Renault will get him back. He should. He would be. I don't think they should.
It makes sense to bring him in as a reserve driver. He knows the team. He knows the staff.
Yeah.
He would be the right guy to put in that spot. You know, it's really a non-position on the team unless something drastic happens. I mentioned this when we were talking earlier. It makes sense to pick him up, to have him there in case you have that little disaster that takes one of your other drivers out. Yeah.
No, I mean, the guy is very talented. I would rather have them, you know, pay for him and drive for a team, you know, buy him a ride at some team.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking because the Ho-Ping Tung is kind of, for the rest of the season situation with his back injury, that it would make sense to put him in that reserve slot.
Ho-Ping Tung's racing record is good, but, you know, it's not as impressive, not even close as Romain Grosjean or Nico Hülkenberg. I mean, these are, you know, creme de la creme drivers of the series. So, I you know, it's hard to keep a good man down unless you totally screw up.
Exactly.
But the problem is, you know, like what's going to happen, normal course of business, Alexander Rossi, Esteban Gutierrez, Robert Wickens, all these three will move up to GP2 most probably next year, okay?
Yeah, almost certainly.
And you already have some very good, young, talented drivers there like Jules Bianchi, Sam Bird, and there is this English kid, Alexander Sims, and Valtteri Bottas, who is the test driver for Williams. They all should land in GP2. So GP2 is going to be very cutthroat
next
year.
It'll be very interesting next season.
Yeah, and if somebody stands out, then, you know, more and more new blood is coming. And that's the thing about Formula One. When you get your opportunity, grab it.
Yeah, you've got to show some success. Otherwise, you're going to end up... You're going to end up in DTM or
IRL.
Exactly.
With Mike Conway and Jean-Carl Vernet. Which is not a bad deal as long as you can get into a competitive deal and win.
Yeah, or get into a car and be competitive, just, you know, to have a, you know, be able to drive race cars for a living. Ooh, what a rough gig.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, even when Trans Am had factory support, if you're with the factory team, that is, everything is paid for. You never have to pay for anything. It's a good life.
Yeah, you don't have to buy your own clothes.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. And I've seen that from very close quarters, so I know how it is. But anyway, now we go to World Rally Championship from Germania. Sebastian Loeb wins the Rally Germany for an amazing eighth time. He now has a 58-point lead in the championship with four rounds to go. In September, which is around the corner, he could secure his seventh consecutive World Championship when WRC reaches the Japanese soil or Japanese round or whatever you want to call it. His Citroën teammates Danny Sordo, who might go to Ford next year, and Sebastian Ogier were second and third, respectively, in Germany. And with some wonderful music from Manuel and Music of the Mountains, and I'm sure all our listeners know what that tune was, we come to our latest feature. And you know, Steve, this normally we don't do this kind of stuff, but this is, we're not making this up. This is historical stuff. But when you have a 3-week layover, it's a slow week.
Your mind starts to wander into realms that you would normally not endeavor.
Yeah. So this segment is called Papillon Pilots. Drivers who went behind the bars. This is a case from mace in the face to fall from grace. And of course, the most famous is when the door slammed shut on Bertrand Gachot in a London prison, a new door opened for Michael Schumacher and rest his history, and so was Gachot's F1 career. Bertrand Gachot once said in an interview that he was on his way to a meeting with Jordan F1 team sponsor Fuji when the incident took place. So this was definitely no Kodak moment for him, or for Eddie Jordan, who was following him in another car. According to Gachot, Eddie even commented that he should get this stuff for his wife. What happened, Gachot was driving his girlfriend's Alfa Romeo, and some taxi driver cut him off, and he kind of cut him off, and there was a fender bender, and the guy came and, you know, started yelling, or I don't know if he slapped him or whatever. So he grabbed the... her mace from the pepper spray from the glove box and used it, and then according to him, the whole London taxi drivers were there in his face, and it got pretty, you know, ugly.
Yeah.
And ironically, when he became a free bird and went to his F1 race, most people avoided him, and he mentioned especially Alex Zanardi. According to Gachot, the only person who came up to him to offer his sympathies was Michael Schumacher.
Yeah, the guy who took his seat.
Yeah, I mean, that's nice of Michael, but, you know, how brutal. And, you know, I was reading another interview. He was really, really low on Eddie Jordan. And in one of the interviews, he said that, you know, at one of the races, he was there with his girlfriend. And Eddie invited him to his motorhome to sort things out because Eddie Jordan had served him termination papers while he was in prison. Okay? And he said that later on he sent him an invoice for payment of the meal that his girlfriend had in Eddie Jordan's motorhome at the race.
Oh, come on. That's pretty cheap.
Yeah. But you'll be surprised what goes on out there. Okay, now we come to a case of Randy Lanier. This was a guy who was racing in IMSA GT Championship in the 70s, 80s. There was a lot of drug money in motor racing. He also made it to the Indy 500. And I call this a a case of life on a hot roll turn into life without parole. And what, you know, what the Federales do is they try to, and they want you to talk, give some names. And there was a gentleman that he could have testified against, but he refused to testify against him, and he was like even bigger. I mean, these people were serious.
It's the classic. They basically try to use the little fish to get the bigger fish to get yet the bigger fish. Get as far up the chain as they can before they...
I mean, these people had brought in like, they're some, done some serious business at like a corporate level of bringing drugs into the U.S. So he would not squeal, and so they threw the book at him, life without parole.
Ouch.
Yeah, which is pretty harsh. And then, of course, there's the famous case of like father, like son, the story of John Paul Jr. and Sr. Sr. was of Dutch heritage originally, and his case is amazing. At one time what had happened, this is, we're talking 70s, 80s, he called one of his old buddies who the Federales was trying to use to, you know, squeal and, you know, point fingers. So he brings, invites him over to his boat in a Florida marina. And when he got there, he shot him like four or five times, point blank, you know, very close range.
Yeah.
And the guy fell in water. He got on in his boat and took off and was gone for years and years. And as luck would have it, the guy survived. So now what happened, he was not only going to be testifying against him, John Paul Sr. was accused of trying to kill a federal witness. So But they finally tracked him down, living the high life, secret high life in Switzerland, brought him here. And you won't believe this. He came here, he was sentenced to like 25 years, served his time, and got out. And history has repeated itself. His new girlfriend is missing. And I haven't seen what has happened, but amazing. But the son was very quick. I met him a few times because he was racing when I got here. And he, John Paul Jr., was very famous. He once upon a time, I think it was only his third or fourth IndyCar race. I think it was the Michigan 400 or Michigan 500. And he won that race, and if I remember correctly, over Rick Mir. So that really put his name on top of the... And in those days, IndyCar racing was some serious business, not like what we have now. Then we have the case of Brotherly Love, the Whittingtons. And they were, I don't know where they were from, but they were operating from Florida. And at one Indy in the 80s, all three brothers qualified for the Indy 500. And they were also involved in some serious, you know, moolah. Yeah, so, you know, it's...
It doesn't pay to be a race car driver living in Florida in the 80s.
Yeah, and, what these, I mean, this was a whole culture in itself. You know, what these people were doing is they were, you know, getting these twin-engine Cessna Piper plane and taking out all the seats and putting extra fuel tanks. And they would fly these small plane from here to Colombia, Mexico, whatever, long distance below the radar. So, you know, all good things must come to an end as far as these
good
things.
Good cash flow to support your racing career, but not good when you get caught.
IMSA, you know, actually the people started calling them International Marijuana Smuggling Association, so that was not good. And then, of course, you know, finally we have a case of Ronnie Peterson's waffle in Belgium. This is amazing. Ronnie Peterson in the 70s was one of the top drivers, kind of like Kimi Räikkönen before he won his world championship from Sweden. And I don't remember exactly if it was 1972 or 73 race. Spa. And how apropos.
Good time.
He's going to Spa. He's at the track, basically. And, you know, there's always a big line. Things in those days was not as organized as they are now. You know, VIP lane, this and that. So he had to make a left turn to go to where all the drivers and team people were in his car. And what he did, instead of waiting till he gets there, he just made a little earlier exit. And the local police people complained that he drove over one of the foot of one of the policemen. So they grabbed him, took him. This is on race day. And they took him to jail. And then, you know, all hell broke loose with Colin Chapman. What are we going to do now? So somehow they were able to, I think, get like the Belgian, you know, it's on a Sunday. Nobody's at work. So they were, I think, able to get to the Belgian interior minister and plead with him. So the deal was struck that, okay, we'll release him for the race, but after that he must check back with the local authorities.
Check back in.
Which he did and stayed there. Stayed there for a couple of days. So these were some little international intrigues that I thought I'll share with our listeners. all factual. So, shall we take a little break for PGT?
Nass, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And now, let's go right to the interviews. Nasser?
Okay, our first conversation is with Bob Bondurant, a gentleman famous for his racing school, but also had a very accomplished racing career. This is a brief chat. I met him at the Monterey, you know, Rolex reunion at Laguna Seca. I would like to thank him for his time. And, of course, one other question I had to ask him was about his recent marriage at on the grid in the Monte Carlo Grand Prix. So please enjoy this conversation, a brief conversation with Bob Bondurant. And after that, we have another conversation with Hiro Matsushita. Okay, folks, I'm here with one of the legends of American motorsports, Mr. Bob Bondurant. Bob, how are you today?
Oh, fantastic. Whenever you come to Monterey for the vintage event, and especially this weekend honoring Dan Gurley, buddy of mine, it's fantastic.
Now, you recently got married at Monte Carlo. As an old-time Formula One fan, I have to ask you, why not Parabolica or Eau Rouge?
Well, Monaco is the best in the world. Race there. And I thought, you know, let's see if we can get married there. And everyone said, no, you can't do it. They'll never let you do it. Well, my wife and I figured out a way to do that. And on Friday of the Grand Prix, or Thursday, they had practice all day, Formula One practice. On Friday, they had practice in the morning, but they opened the track up in the afternoon. So we got married at like, it was like 1 o'clock. Yeah, I got married on turn 12, one of the fast left-handers. Yeah, it was right down there where all the big, beautiful, gorgeous boats are and all that. And it turned out fantastic. What we didn't know while we were getting married, they have these huge TV screens for the race. And someone heard we're getting married and they plugged it in. And we didn't know we were on the big, huge TV screens until we got home and looked at the video. But my God, because people say, oh, wow, yeah, we saw you getting married and fantastic. And we go, yeah, how did they find out? And then we ended up on the front page of the Monte Carlo Times. That was fantastic.
Very happy for you. Obviously, the passion for motor racing is still there. What do you make of the F1 season so far?
It's very competitive, and I like it, because that one maker is winning everything.
Who do you think will be world champion at the end of the season?
You know what? I don't know. I was hoping for Ferrari to be up there, but I guess because I had raced for Ferrari. I raced Formula One for Ferrari in my first race, the U.S. Grand Prix, just after we had beaten Ferrari in the World Manufacturers Championship. So he gave me my first Formula One ride in his car at the U.S. Grand Prix. So, but it's very competitive, which is great. The Red Bull is strong. They probably will win. I don't know which one. One car is powered by a Ferrari, and the other one's by a Renault. So the thing I like about it most of all is it's just a very competitive season.
We have a lot of young drivers in Formula One these days. Who do you think is the best racing driver on the grid these days?
Well, Patrick Long came from go-karts. I met him when he was racing go-karts. Then I saw him last night at the Rolex dinner, and he said, "You were my first instructor and taught me the most, and I really appreciate it." He's racing for Porsche. And I would love to see him get into Formula One, because I think he's very competitive, very smooth, and I'd like to see an American get in there and win.
What about the U.S. Grand Prix? Do you think this adventure in Austin City Limits will happen?
I hope so. Yeah, it's being talked about. It's going to happen. They have not built the track yet, but I understand they're in the throes of starting to build the track. So that would be fantastic to have a U.S. Grand Prix again.
Your thoughts on what happened with USF1?
Pardon?
Your thoughts on USF1, the Ken Anderson adventure?
Oh, yeah. It's a shame it didn't get completed in time to run. I was hoping they would do that. But I think they started running out of money and weren't able to complete it.
Apart from Spa, what's your favorite track in Europe?
The Nürburgring and Monaco. I love Monaco. And the Nürburgring set a lap record in the Cobra Daytona Coupe in 65. We won our class. And the guy from Germany came over to my school at Sears Point and said, do you realize your lap record just got beaten last week? I said, you got to be kidding. That's 15 years ago. So it lasted for 15 years. But I love the ring. I like competitive circuits.
Fine. I really appreciate your time. Can you give a message to our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. I'm sure they would love to hear from you.
Well, I hope all of you watch Formula One and also watch all of our racing over here as well as over there. NASCAR is big over here, and the American Le Mans series is big now over here. So let's all of us cheer for racing, and may it go on strongly forever and ever.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Very nice to meet you.
Who's this?
Okay, this second conversation was with Japanese driver Hiro Matsushita, who was quite a well-known name in the IndyCar racing many years ago, also won the Formula Atlantic Championship. And Matsushita, and I hope I'm not screwing up his name too badly, he comes from the family that owns the Panasonic brand. You know, overseas they were...
Matsushita.
Yeah, when I was young, their brand overseas was National, and it was National for many years, but I think now they are promoting Panasonic. And he lives now in Southern California. He is the owner of the Swift Racing Car program and is involved in some other project, which you can hear when he talks. So my thanks to Hiro-san, and please enjoy the conversation.
Nasser.
Nasser.
Yeah.
Nasser.
Originally from Pakistan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, folks, I'm here with... And I have another question for you. Sorry to ask you this. How do you pronounce your last name?
Matsushita.
Matsushita.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, but what is the actual pronunciation?
Matsushita.
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 Okay.
Bumpy type of a motorcycle. Then when I was 18, I started to the car racing in rally car in Japan.
How long did you do circuit racing? In you have a beautiful track, Suzuka. Did you ever race there?
Well, I did, it's like kind of a spec production series. I think the early 80s or maybe late 70s, yes.
And before coming to the U.S., did you do any racing in Europe also?
No, only in Japan.
Okay. And how did you find the racing competition level in the U.S.? You started out with Atlantic. Tell us a little bit about your team and your two seasons in Atlantic, please.
Sure. After I moved to the United States in 1986, I started with the Formula Ford, year and a half, 86 and 87, with the Dwayne Anderson Racing. And 88, I stepped up to the Atlantic. And also the 88, I drove the IMSA GTP light with the Jim Downing.
What were the highlights for you in your Formula Atlantic series?
I think maybe highlight was 89, that I got the championship with a four win. Yes.
And I remember when you moved up to IndyCars, I think it was Phoenix where you had a huge crash. Do I have the track right?
I think 1990, I got a little crash on a turn two exit for IndyCars, but a huge crash is a 94. Jack Villeneuve, when he was rookie, he T-boned me.
That's the one I was talking about. Where was that?
It's 1994, I think the turn, exit of turn 3, between turn 3 and turn 4.
And what track was that?
Phoenix.
Okay, well, and you were hurt in that accident too, right?
I just dislocated the shoulder. It's hurt, but it's not major.
Okay.
Nobody got a major injury.
Okay, that's good. Now, how much did you enjoy oval racing, you know, Atlantic in those days, or still is all road racing? How much did you enjoy oval racing?
Well, I enjoyed both oval and the road racing very much. But in the oval racing, it's physically it's not tough, but mentally it's a little tougher than road racing because even straightaways, we cannot relax. Road racing, long straightaway, we can think some things, but oval racing is too busy.
So I'm curious, if you're in a road race like Road America, what would you think of?
Excuse me.
What does a driver think of if he's on a road course? Like you're saying, you can think of something. So if you're going high speed at Road America or Mid Ohio, what would a driver think of?
Any race track, like road course, even like a Long Beach street course, it's average, it's low speed. Well, low speed means compares a high speed road course. But any road course track. So many combinations, sometimes it's just a single turn, but some other times it's multiple, like S's or long carousel. We always think about concentrations, think about how we can manage next corner.
Thinking ahead. Okay, now you started Swift Engineering some years ago. Mm-hmm. What led you to start manufacturing cars here in California?
I always raced with Swift race cars when I was young days in the lower class. I already knew some key person about Swift Swift race cars. Then 1991, I decided to purchase a Swift race cars to be a high-tech engineering company. Based on the race car technology.
Your company has designed and built a very beautiful car for Formula Nippon. Any chance you might design a nice looking car for IRL here?
We are always looking for the any chance for making good race cars, and also we are making airplane also. Our technology is I think have a very good confidence. Of technology, and of course, we are American companies. We'd like to make another beautiful car for American racing.
And how long? How did the deal with Formula Nippon come along? And how long is this contract for?
Well, the current Formula Nippon contract is 3 years plus options, and we work for Formula Nippon's series quite long, like. Maybe first time that we tried to do that late 90, we couldn't get a chance. But finally, 2 years ago, we got a chance to make a contract.
Now, Formula One season is coming to an end soon. I'm sure you follow that also. Who would you like to see win the Formula One World Championship?
Well, that is a very interesting question. So I have another company, it's a marketing company in Japan. We work for the Toyota Formula One team. I go to Formula One sometimes a year. This year's champion is very interesting. Well, of course, Jenson Button is still leading, but Brown GPs, they are getting a little bit struggling right now. And but I think they're still Brown GP. Jensen or Rubens, those two guys are good chance to get the championship.
Now, since you mentioned you work for, you do some work for Toyota Formula One team, we'll see if we can get some scoop from you. A, are they staying in Formula One? And B, who will be their two drivers next season?
I'm not like person to answer that, but I think that Toyota, this is just my opinions. I think that Toyota, they are looking for. Formula One's for a long term, because it's not just racing, it's so many B2B business, and I think that Toyota thinks it's Formula One, it has a tremendous value of their industry, their business.
Okay. I really thank you for your time. How about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. If you would like to have a message for them, please.
I think the motor racing is always fun to watch, and especially to be at the racetrack in personal, that is way better than watching a TV. Please come to the racetrack.
So what if somebody's watching on a big screen Panasonic TV, you would say, come to the track?
I don't know.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob Bondurant and Hiro Matsuchida, for joining F1 Weekly. And now, let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
This week's forum updates from Chemex. It's been a relatively subdued week on the forum as the summer break takes its toll on everyone. Recent threads have included, if you could only drive a car make that started with the same letter, what letter would you choose? Driver salaries. Kimi is still the third highest earning driver in F1. Tricky is looking for advice on a new laptop and phone. An Australian election? Pirelli starts testing 2011 tires. The human-powered car that can reach 60 miles an hour. Let's have an F1 race with human-powered cars.
They're great.
Things will no doubt be picking up significantly this week as we near the Spa race, and we can get back to normality. Until then, Ye has recently posted some pictures in the countryside thread from his local village fete, including some terrier racing, where he became the first owner of an F1 Weekly hat signed by an F1 driver. If you haven't visited the forums, now is the perfect time to start as we move into the busy period of racing that will no doubt be accompanied by many lively discussions. You know you want to. Thanks, Chemex.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, the forum just hit 700 members.
Woohoo!
Pretty, pretty impressive. And of course, that picture of the F1 Weekly hat signed by Mr. Mark Webber was pretty exhilarating for me.
Wow.
It was. That was pretty good. And that thread about...
Did Mark Webber go, what the F is F1 Weekly?
No. He knows. It's quality. Because it's his favorite show.
Oh.
Exactly.
Yeah, I had actually a friend that watched 300 on YouTube recently. He's like,
what the hell?
What the hell were you guys thinking?
Yeah, you know, and what were we thinking? You know, that was because of the executive producer.
Well, that...
And he was exhilarated.
It was something to commemorate the 300
show. Yeah, and we had the facilities, and we were pretty excited. But the problem is, it goes on and on forever. It's meaningless.
Probably one of the longest shows we ever did.
Probably. So, yeah, number 300, we're not doing that ever again. Never. Ever.
No, don't say never ever again, because if somebody pays us, we'll gladly do it again.
That's true, but we're never going to do that again. Anyway, quickly, let's go right to San Francisco Formula One Group. Check them out at sff1.com. They are a great bunch of guys. They meet up at bars and grills, karting tracks, especially the one in Burlingame quite often. So check them out, sff1.com.
And I'm sure they'll have something going this weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
For Spa, come on.
Absolutely. And they just have a lot of fun. And they're well-organized meetings with a couple hundred people sometimes. And it's just a lot of fun. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. Thank you very much for listening. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.